Ever feel like your brain is turning into mush from staring at a screen all day? Me too, friend. And if you're like me, some of the primary culprits are Instagram and Twitter, with Facebook and TikTok close behind. In The Chaos Machine, the inside story of how social media rewired our minds and our world, Max Fisher, an international reporter and columnist at the New York Times, offers an authoritative and devastating account of the impacts of those fun little apps. Max, who contributed to a series about social media that was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 2019, tracks the high-stakes inside story of how big tech's race to drive engagement and profits at all costs has fractured the world. Here he is to share five of the big ideas.
Hi, my name is Max Fisher. I'm a reporter and columnist at the New York Times, where I cover events around the world. My book is The Chaos Machine, the inside story of how social media rewired our minds and our world. I'd like to share a few insights with you from the book. Number one, social platforms are lying to you, but they hide it. When you open up social media, you think that you're seeing the views and the sentiments, the political opinions of your community, whether that's friends and family or the people who you just like to follow online. And you think it's the world being reflected through the platforms. But what you're seeing is a lie. It's a lie that the platform tells you in order to manipulate you. What you're actually seeing are the choices made by the platform's artificial intelligence systems, which have combed through huge amounts of online content, more than you could take in yourself, and then selected from that a tiny proportion of all those posts and images and videos to show you, and it has ordered and sequenced them in a way that those systems have learned will be maximally effective at keeping you engaged for as long as possible. The social platforms design those systems, for which they employ thousands of engineers, including some of the world's top names in artificial intelligence, to deliberately turn your own greatest cognitive and emotional weaknesses against you. Companies draw, and this used to be openly discussed in Silicon Valley before they learned to hide it, from some of the largest pools of private user data ever assembled, including by individually tracking every user, yes, including you, if you are on the internet, they're tracking you, to learn precisely what will best manipulate you. Also draw on some of the darkest corners of human psychology, everything from the science of addiction behind casinos, whose influence you can see in the slot machine-like colors and sounds of social platforms, to the science of how we identify truth or separate right from wrong. And they do all this to understand precisely how to manipulate the human mind, turning it against even your own free will. Those insights are constantly developed, iterated on by these vastly sophisticated AIs that work every second of every day to deconstruct our deepest impulses and frailties so that it can turn them against us. Insight number two is the social platforms are doing all of this to train you. Social platforms want to keep us scrolling, tapping for as long as possible so they can show us more of the ads that make them their billions of dollars in revenue every year, and they are enormously effective at this. In 2014, according to Census Bureau data, for the first time, the average American spent more time socializing on social media platforms like Facebook than they did socializing in person, and that gap has widened every year since. This is now the predominant way we consume news and information, learn about our world, relate to one another. The platforms leverage its hold on these crucial elements of the human experience to influence users even further. Because social platforms learned to do much more than just addict you so that you'll keep passively scrolling. They learn to train you into certain behaviors, to feel and act specific ways so that you will post back on the platforms in ways that will make both you and the users you interact with likelier to spend more time online. And in training you, the platforms change who you are. I'll give you an example. There's an experiment I write about in the book where researchers got together a bunch of research subjects and before the experiment tested all of these subjects on their baseline propensity to outrage. You know, how prone to outrage were they as people? And then they had those subjects post on Twitter. It was actually a fake Twitter platform so the experimenters could control the experience, but the subjects thought it was real. Half of the subjects were told to send a tweet expressing outrage, whether they wanted to or not. And then the researchers showed those subjects that their tweets expressing outrage had gotten a whole bunch of likes and shares. And this is something we know actually happens online, because we know from lots and lots of other studies and research into the social platforms that every single one of these platforms artificially amplifies the reach of any post with outrage in it. The platforms just know, they have learned that outrage performs really well. So if you post something with outrage in it, the platform will blast that post out to lots of people and you get more engagement than usual, more likes and shares. So the researchers showed those fake tweets to the research subjects with all of that engagement on them. And they did this a few times. And very quickly, what happened was that all of the research subjects, even the ones who had been identified as averse to outrage, started to internalize this. They thought they were getting all this positive feedback from the community, all this affirmation and attention for expressing outrage, and really it was the platform tricking them. And sure enough, those users wanted to post more outrage tweets, and each one was more outraged than the last. What really blew my mind about this experiment is that the research subjects became more prone to outrage even when they were online, away from social media, away from the computer or their phone. That training, that faked sense of social reward had been delivered to them so powerfully, such a sophisticated system, that it had changed their underlying nature as human beings. And this exact process, this exact training, is happening to all of us. It's happening to all of us every single day, billions of users around the world, and it's more than just outrage being drilled into us. And understanding that was, for me, a first big step in understanding the consequences of social media for our world. Number three, the consequences of social media's training and influence reach into every single facet of human life, and sometimes with really severe consequences. And these automated systems, the algorithms that choose what we see, choose what goes viral and doesn't, and choose how to present it to us, turn out to be by far the most powerful experiments ever designed in identifying, surfacing, really putting a car battery to, our deepest and sometimes our darkest instincts. And whatever is the thing that will keep us not just scrolling, but posting ourselves, process feeding that beast and hooking in other users. And there's one example I think of in particular because it shows just how incredibly effective these systems can be. And this is something that I reported in Indonesia, which is a very big country in Southeast Asia where social media is really prevalent. Seven villages in different parts of Indonesia, this huge country, these villages with no connection to one another, had one day, or I think maybe it was over the course of a week, all simultaneously risen up in this spontaneous mob violence, and always against some innocent guy from outside the village who just happened to be traveling through the village. And I looked into this working with this woman in Indonesia who had been tracking these villages that were rising up and attacking people. And it turned out that all traced back to this single viral rumor that had appeared on Facebook. And that rumor had initially come from a really small account with no real audience or reach, but the platform had identified it. Identified it correctly and with this kind of really kind of terrifying precision that only a machine trained on billions of online interactions could identify as freakishly engaging, as hitting exactly the kind of conspiracy and identity panic and call to collective outrage that we know best drive engagement on social platforms. And so the system had taken this rumor and pushed out to so many users, pushed it so aggressively and so quickly, and in a way that so powerfully hijacked those users' instincts for collective action, that those seven villages all rose up into violence at once. This was in early 2018, and a few months after this, I just happened to go to Facebook's headquarters in Silicon Valley to interview a bunch of their senior people for a story on a different topic. And in one of these meetings with a couple of the people at Facebook who are meant to lead responses to exactly this sort of crisis, I told them about it. Not even ask about it as a reporter for a story, but just, you know, one person to another, hey, this seems really serious, you should know about it. And they kind of shrugged and said, okay, and said, oh, you know, maybe someday an independent researcher will look into this. They didn't ask me any follow-ups. They didn't ask the names of the villages or the woman I'd worked with in Indonesia who had identified this. And that rumor that had caused so much chaos in Indonesia might sound familiar to you, actually. It claimed that shadowy elites in the country were in league with minorities to kidnap local children and to harvest their blood and organs. And the reason that that might sound familiar to you is that that is the QAnon conspiracy. And a few months after I met with people at Facebook to tell them that, hey, this is spreading in Indonesia, that same rumor got ferociously promoted by Facebook and YouTube, especially as well as the other platforms, to millions of Americans under that name, QAnon. And this wasn't just happening in the US. Around that same time, before QAnon got big, before I had this conversation with people at Facebook, within just the span of a few months, I found these platforms promoting basically the exact same rumor in like a half dozen different countries and a half dozen different languages, and Mexico and Germany and Myanmar and Sri Lanka and a few others. It was as if the systems, AIs, were converging on this weird, bizarre, super specific macabre rumor as some sort of skeleton key for boost engagement. And it's a story that I think about a lot because it demonstrates to me the power that these systems can wield over us, which is ubiquitous, but can feel so shocking and so seismic when it's revealed like this. And also because this story to me underscores that there's really no one at the wheel. These are machines, these social platforms with effectively, in the ways that count, no driver, no overseer, more or less free to do with us and our societies and our politics whatever they want, whatever is going to make the companies that run them the most money. And if you go and tell the people who are responsible for it about it, they will just shrug at you. Number four is what can you do against this? And I think more than you might think, but it's maybe a little bit different than what you might expect. This question, what should I do? You know, how do I live in this world where social media is so toxic and so dangerous, is a question that I get a lot. And it's a really hard question, because what power does an individual really have when these companies, quite literally the largest companies by market capitalization in human history, have so utterly conquered not just our attention individually, but the very modes by which we all engage with one another and with the wider world and understand news and reality itself? And I'd like to tell you that the answer is to just turn it off. And generally speaking, that is good advice, given that there's a lot of research showing that even just a couple of weeks away from social media will substantially improve your well-being. There's one experiment that I think about a lot from the book, in which researchers got a bunch of test subjects to switch off Facebook for 4 weeks. So just one platform, and for what is a pretty brief period of time, given that we all spend something like, you know, 10 or 15 years, depending on the person, on these platforms. And in the experiment, compared to the control group subjects who stayed on social media, the ones who shut it off became to a really shocking degree, happier, less anxious. And because of the time away from these systems that are designed to hook us with all these negative emotions like outrage and identity conflict, that it in fact boosted their life satisfaction so dramatically that it was equivalent to, and this blows my mind, 25 to 40% of the effect of going to therapy. 25 to 40% for free, just for deleting an app for a few weeks. And the same study found, and this is probably the more important finding, honestly, that the people who'd shut off social media immediately became, in their political outlooks, dramatically less affected by partisan polarization. The drop in polarization among these people was equivalent to about half of the total rise in polarization in America from 1996 to 2018, which is to say that turning off Facebook for a few weeks was like rolling back two decades of political toxicity and division. So, you know, we have to be honest that turning it off is not a good enough answer. And that's because, first of all, you know, as nice as it might sound as a solution, most of us just don't have that luxury. Social media has been so effective at conquering our worlds that most of us need it to stay engaged, to stay up to date on what's happening, to stay connected to the other people who are on the platforms. And second of all, because even if by some miracle you can completely shut yourself off from these digital platforms, and I do know people who do it, especially people who report on this stuff and are shocked by it, as I think I was, you're still affected by the consequences of these platforms. They're still poisoning the wider world around you, and that comes back to you in your life. So telling people the solution is just to delete some apps from their phone is a little bit like telling them, hey, there's a giant factory polluting the air you breathe and the water you drink, so just buy a bottle of water and try not to worry about it. So I think that there are two things that you as an individual actually can do beyond just trying to spend less time on social media, even if you realistically can't get that time down to zero. First is just to understand, and by understanding, to see the influence that it has over you in terms of what it shows you, what it saturates you with, the ways that it tries to train you, that it the platform's preferences and desires and its politics and its emotional sentiments all get imposed on you and smuggled through what looks like your peers and your community understand that you start to see it, it becomes easier to separate out the platform's influence of what's actually happening in the world. It becomes easier to separate yourself from that influence and to be aware of how it might be affecting you. And the second is just to be aware of and understand how your own mind works. Just as you understand any piece of, you know, complex and powerful machinery that you had to operate, both because social media's power comes from manipulating and in co-opting that mental machinery, but also because the truth of how your mind works is not what you would necessarily think. Some of my biggest takeaways from reporting this book and some of the things that I've heard from readers that most shocked them were not specifically about social media, were rather learning about how we as, you know, the human animal, how we learn, how we determine right from wrong, how we differentiate truth or what is convincing or persuasive from what is not. These are all questions that have received really substantial study in the last 5 or 10 years. And we are, whether we know it or not, in something of an arms race as individuals and societies against the social media companies and understanding this so that we can gird and protect ourselves against it. You know, social platforms have become incredibly sophisticated in exploiting those basic elements of our nature. But if you can understand them too, if you can understand your own nature, the flaws of the coming being human, then you will be able to identify and protect yourself better against that technological influence, which is something that I'm hoping the book will do for people. So thank you for listening, and I hope you find the book interesting.
Thank you, Max. That was Max Fisher with 5 Big Ideas from The Chaos Machine, the inside story of how social media rewired our minds and our world. Also, check out our book bite for Digital Madness, How Social Media is Driving Our Mental Health Crisis and How to Restore Our Sanity by Nicholas Carderis. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.